We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Kachava's indulgent flavors today. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags. Go to kachava.com and use code NEWS. That's KACHAVA.com, code NEWS.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan DeBurka Butler is with us once again to bring us stories from some other parts of the world. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Sean,
to
how
you
getting on?
Right, Bolivia, we're going to go to first, where the former head of the anti-drugs body there, AUX, is one way of putting it. He had a huge. Was it, what kind of a drugs lab was it he had?
Well, we don't know for sure if he was involved in it yet, right? So okay. Anyway, but to answer your question, it was what the authorities are describing are a cocaine crystallization lab, right? So this is a man by the name of Felipe Caceras. He's 63 years old, and he used to be the head of the Controlled Substances Office, right? So he was the head of that organization from 2006 to 2019, which is a very long time for someone to be head of that kind of organization for. But anyway, basically, they found this lab near what they describe as his sand and gravel business that was on his land, right?
Okay.
Now, they're saying that upwards of about 10 people could have been employed in the lab, so giving you an idea of the size of it there. But it's unclear, as I said, whether he was directly involved in it. Now, it could be the case that, you know, the land that he owns is so huge that he rented it out a plot to some people and they were making crystal meth or whatever that they were doing on the site, and he knew nothing about it. That said, the authorities have arrested him and they're trying to establish who ran the lab and whether Caceres was profiting from it in some manner.
Yeah. Was he seen to be, when he was in the official role, was he seen to be particularly effective at that job? Or would it imply he wasn't?
No, that's a good question. The only way I can answer that question is that from 2018 to 2019, I don't know how the hell I know this, but anyway, from 2018 to 2019, the productivity levels of cocaine in Bolivia went up by 20%.
Okay,
right, so that
I
was towards the end
of
his tenure.
Yeah.
But I think the reputation that Bolivia got for cocaine probably accelerated during that time. It's the third largest producer of cocaine in the world after Colombia and Peru, which is probably not the kind of picture that you get when you think of Evo Morales and various other people there. So it's
has there been a problem before with government officials being caught with their hands in the, you know, I was going to say cookie jar, but that's not what it is, really.
In the bag of coke.
Yeah, in the bag of coke. Yeah,
I there has. I mean, there was another guy called René Sanabria who's sentenced to 14 years way back in 2011, and he was high up in the organization as well. And then just last year, I don't know if you remember, I think we might have spoken about it, by the name of Massimiliano Davia. He was extradited in December to New York, and he's facing charges of actual cocaine smuggling, which, of course, he denies.
Yeah.
So there has been problems with employees of that organization in the past, Sean. Yeah.
Yeah. But it seems like it seems very difficult for them to get a handle on this problem. But I suppose so many people are involved in this trade. What are they going to do as an alternative?
Yeah, absolutely. It's impossible, really.
South Korea we're going to go to next, where they've broken a taboo on tattooing. Up to now, was it a doctor or a nurse or something? You had to get a tattoo from.
You had to, officially at least, you had to have a medical license, right? So this was off the back of a Supreme Court decision that was taken in 1992, right? Because of the health dangers with needles and ink, okay? So it obviously went to court. Now, I should start this by saying that South Korea, I don't know if it's as strict in South Korea as that is in Japan, but you know the way in Japan they kind of frown upon tattoos. You're not allowed to go into swimming pools and the like with tattoos, or at least they have to be covered. And it's a bit the same in South Korea, although that is changing, okay, with K-pop and influencer culture and all that kind of thing. So anyway, in 1992, they brought in this legislation that you have to have a medical certificate in order to be able to ink people. But there was thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of tattoo artists in South Korea who did it anyway without a license.
Uh-huh.
But the problem was that they were doing it illegally, right? Mm. And some of them would get caught every now and again, right? So there is actually a tattoo union in South Korea. I don't know if we have one here, but there's a tattoo union in South Korea. And they say that they have given legal support to at least 50 people each year. Who have faced prison. You can go to prison for 5 years for doing it, or you can get a fine of about 35,000 euros or the equivalent thereof, right? So it's pretty hefty.
Yeah.
But what they've noticed in recent years is that judges are less inclined to impose penalties on people. So it appears now Parliament is going with that trend, and they brought in a new act the other day, the Tattooist Act. They brought it on Thursday, which will eventually allow non-medical professionals who compose most of the industry anyway to ink people.
Yeah, but presumably there'll be some form of regulation.
Well,
there
you
still.
See, this is the thing. It's a double-edged sword, right? So it's going to take 2 years for a start for the whole thing to kick in. And then you're going to have to pass an exam. A national exam. Now, what that's going to look like, I don't know.
Is it a written exam?
Or is it all practical?
Bring your tattooing pen exam. But, like, was this largely a social taboo, or was there some sort of medical concern about tattooing?
There was two, right? So I think the initial idea was that it was a social concern because it was associated with gangsters and criminals, okay?
Mm.
So people didn't like it from that. And it's still unpopular, by the way, in South Korea. In general. But there were medical concerns. And in fact, the Medical Association of Korea has objected to this law. They're saying that not only does it damage the skin, but it can also pose other health risks, including interference with cancer diagnosis.
Hmm.
I kind of looked into that to see how they do it. And actually, it kind of makes sense because the pigment can cover any moles you might have on skin cancer.
Okay,
kind of
all
thing.
Right. If it was a large tattoo. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
If it was a large tattoo, indeed. But they might be clutching at straws there, but there you go. But anyway... then they're saying that tattooing is fundamentally a medical procedure, and it's saying that just because it's becoming popular doesn't reduce the risks that go with it. Now, I'm not 100% sure what they're fighting for here, the medical profession, because it's not as if there's a huge amount of people who are getting tattoos off them anyway. There was a survey that was done in 2023 which found that only 1.4% of respondents with personal tattoos had actually gone to hospitals or the equivalent thereof, or clinics, I would imagine, to get it done. So, I mean, they're not exactly keeping doctors in business anyway.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's an interesting change. Interesting resistance to it as well.
Yeah.
Right, Madagascar, they've imposed curfews. Why?
Yeah, the other day when I looked at this story for the first time, that was the story that they were imposing curfews. I think they kicked in last Thursday, but it's kind of changed over the weekend. The reason they did it is because of this continuing Gen Z protest that I keep talking about. And I know I spoke about it yesterday, last week for East Timor and the week before for Nepal. And I'm sorry to bring it up again, but I'm just finding it interesting that it's kind of spreading, right, for slightly different reasons.
Mm.
In the case of Madagascar, it's because they're sick of having long-standing water and power cuts, right? And so they've got together online again, young people, and they've decided to take their protests to the streets. They did impose curfews. That's because these protests were getting violent and the police reaction to them. And in fact, the UN has come out and basically condemned the use of unnecessary force, which was used by the security forces there, which has resulted in the killing of 22 people and the injury of hundreds more.
Crikey.
So it's got really bad.
Yeah.
But so they imposed the curfews. And then since then, the president of Madagascar, interesting guy, 51-year-old Andry Rajoelina, he's been there for three terms. I think he was elected for his third term in 2023. And he decided to, first of all, on Thursday, fire the energy minister. And he thought that'll be grand. That'll placate them. No problem. But they came out onto the streets again.
Mm.
And he's now sacked the whole government. Which seems like an extraordinary step to take, albeit that he's been a bit Machiavellian here or whatever, distancing himself from this and saying, not my fault, it's all of these guys, and I'll find replacements and everything will be fine. But it's just interesting that this so-called Gen Z protest seems to be spreading from country to country to country because of sort of underlying grievances that young people have about housing, unemployment, you know, government kids of government officials spending money, this kind of thing. So it's one to watch.
An interesting one that it's kind of spreading from country to country. As you say, there's slightly different reasons in different places.
Yeah. But they're all long, sort of festering problems, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and not widely dissimilar to here.
Oh, there you go.
And so have the protests stopped for the time being now that there's no government to speak of?
I think things have calmed down. It did get to the point where there was looting and obviously those 22 deaths that I mentioned. I don't know, to tell you the truth. I haven't checked it since maybe Saturday or Sunday, so I don't know what it was like yesterday. But, you know, Rajoelina is looking at bringing in a new government putting a new government in place, and he says he hopes to have a new prime minister within 3 days. He's sort of making it look as if he's doing the interviews personally.
Right, Armenia, we're going to now, a row over a passport stamp. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's significant, though, because at the centre of it is a mountain called Mount Ararat. Okay, now Mount Ararat.
Was that where Noah?
That's right. I thought I had heard it somewhere before.
Or some people think that was where Noah.
Indeed, absolutely. Yeah. But anyway, it's kind of a ubiquitous symbol for Armenia, right? They have it on cigarettes and alcohol and all sorts of things, but they also have it on their official passport stamps, or at least they did until recently. Because the problem with Mount Ararat is that even though it is a symbol of Armenia, it's not actually in Armenia, right? It can be seen from all over Armenia or large parts of Armenia, but it's actually in Turkey. Now, that's through no fault of the Armenians. You'll remember that there was, during World War One, Turkey basically took over a part of Armenia, committed genocide, although some people dispute that. Killed 1.5 million people, cleared out all the Armenians out of this area that was formerly Armenia and took it over. And since 1921, it's been part of Turkey. So Mount Ararat has been there. But it's always been a symbol for Armenia. It's a bit like our four green fields, whatever way you want to put it, right? And something that they cling on to as part of their history. So removing this from the passport stamps has enraged some people, as you can imagine, because of the recent history, right? They've had this ongoing war with Azerbaijan over the territory known as Nagorno-Karabakh, which they've lost effectively, and they've been humiliated, and that humiliation seems to continue. And so some people inside in Armenia are very unhappy about this step that has been taken, even though it's just this apparently really small measure that they've taken.
Yeah. But is there a reason why this step has been taken? Are we playing nice with Turkey, perhaps?
Yeah. So essentially, that's what it is. So you'll remember that Trump, one of the seven wars that he has now stopped, allegedly, is this conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia. And he had the two leaders of those country in those countries in the White House there. I think about last month or maybe 6 weeks ago, anyway. And the prime minister of Armenia at the moment, a guy called Nikol Pashinyan, he seems to be a person who wants to get Armenia on the track towards peace, right? So they were defeated in a war in 2020, defeated again in 2023. It's done as far as he's concerned.
Yeah.
So let's start getting on with our neighbours. They don't have an open border with Turkey. Probably if you open that border up, you'd start trading. Certainly that deal that was done with Trump has led to what will possibly be an economic corridor going through Armenia, which would mean that goods would bypass Russia and Iran. So it'd be very nice for everyone, including the Americans.
Yeah.
And so the Armenians are, as he says himself, he's taken the long view here, that there's no way, you know, that we can go into the future without having peace with our neighbours. So this is what we're going to have to do.
But he's effectively accepted that they're never getting that land back.
Oh, that is done, I'm afraid. Yeah. You have to feel sorry for them in some parts. But Nagorno-Karabakh is a very, very strange story and has been for a long time.
Yeah. Right, we're just going to go over that closed border to Turkey where there's a row about doner kebabs.
So this is Turkey was attempting to force kebab shops in the EU to adhere to strict rules on how to make a doner kebab, right? So they've been doing this for, I'm not sure how long they had this campaign going for, but it was a bid for this traditional speciality guaranteed label, right? It's kind of like a European stamp which says a doner kebab can only be made with this, 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 and this, or else it's not a doner kebab.
Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough. It's like champagne or
that kind of thing. Of stuff. Yeah. But it has a different title. But anyway, it's the same idea. Mm. And so what they were asking for was certain things around the type of meat that was going to be used, the size of the meat that was going to be in the doner kebab, the type of knife that was used to cut that meat, and the various different glazings or sauces that would go with it. Except they got an awful lot of pushback, particularly from one of the most powerful countries in Europe, which is Germany, and full, of course, of Turkish people. A lot of Turkish people there.
Yeah.
About 1.5 million actual Turkish people there now, and then lots of people, you know, descendants, people whose families went there before. And they took the doner kebab with them, of course, but they made it their own, and they have their own ingredients in it. So I'll give you one example. In Germany, you'd often get veal or turkey in a doner kebab, and the Turks didn't want that. Okay, they only wanted beef or lamb of certain age. So they were getting pushback from this, again, various organizations, associations around doner kebabs in Germany didn't want this to be imposed upon them. And it seems now that the Turks got wind that they were going to, or the people representing Turkey at least, got wind that they were losing this particular battle, and they have now withdrawn their bid.
Yeah. Okay. And so Turkey was making representations to the EU to kind of enforce this kind of stamp of this is a really proper Turkish doner kebab.
Yeah.
And why would the EU even do that?
I don't know. It's a good question. It's a good question. But they obviously felt that there was some reason to do it. I mean, the doner kebab tradition in Germany is really old now. I think the amount of money that's spent in the EU on doner kebabs, the vast majority of it is actually in Germany. So it's an industry within itself, and it employs lots of people. So to go in there and try and disrupt that would have been a bit messy, nearly as messy as eating a doner kebab.
It's a curious thing in the sense that, like, if you go to England, there's, you know, an Indian restaurant everywhere, and half the stuff that's on the menu was devised in England.
Chicken tikka masala, for example.
Exactly, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you wouldn't get that in India at all. But again, maybe it's probably an attempt to make nice with Turkey.
Absolutely.
As it turned out. Yeah. Right, so what should we look out for over the next 7 days?
Yeah, so there's a good bit coming up. So on Friday, Sean Diddy Combs is going to be sentenced, apparently. And on the same day that Taylor Swift releases her new album called The Life of a Showgirl. That must be her 150th, is it?
It is, yeah. But I think there's a movie coming out as well.
About Combs or Taylor Swift?
About Taylor Swift, I know, that would be a rather grim view, one should say. No, I think I don't know what's in it, but there's some movie.
She'll be in it, definitely.
Well, she almost certainly will
be. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And then on Saturday, Japan's Liberal Democratic Party holds its leadership vote. I think that might end up being, I forgot to look into this, sorry, but I think that might end up being the Prime Minister then of Japan. But I need to double check that. Sorry. Yeah, okay.
But there is a kind of a Japan first movement going on there. I don't know how much traction they're going to get in this, but that'll be an interesting one to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Sunday, the first elections due in Syria since the fall of Assad. Again, I don't know if they're local elections or national elections, but interesting to see what happens there, just in terms of whether they pass off peacefully or not.
Yeah, and hopefully it's a step in the right direction. Jonathan, thanks a million.
Cheers, Sean.
As ever, that was Jonathan DeBurka-Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Kachava's indulgent flavors today. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags. Go to kachava.com and use code NEWS. That's KACHAVA.com, code NEWS.